Welcome to episode 2 of the Man of Starch podcast for Monday, July 7th, 2008. Your source for the polite musings of a real-life high school English teacher and drama coach from beautiful Mariposa, California. In this week's podcast, pod-safe music from Six Under Par and Alicia Lang, a roundup of the top news stories in education and how they will affect you, a review of what Man of Starch has been reading and watching, highlights from this week in history, a calendar of events for all those Central Valley kids complaining that there is nothing to do in this town, the cool techie site of the week, etymology for a semi-literate world, and we'll close out on a lighter note with highlights from our small-town daily sheriff's log. But let's get started with our first independent artist of the week, Six Under Par, with their ska song Bad Timing. We got this little tune over at music.podshow.com. Enjoy.
Monday morning, you like me, but I never knew it. No. Tuesday afternoon, I found out that I blew it with you.
That was Bad Timing by Six Under Par. I've got a couple of news stories in the education realm this week to share with you. The first is about one of the most dreaded aspects of school life, cafeteria food. Castle Rock, Colorado. The pre-cooked beef patties with the fake charcoal lines won't be on the menu at Castle View High School this fall. Instead, students will dine on freshly grilled hamburgers from grass-fed, hormone- and antibiotic-free cattle, what is often described as natural or organic meat, raised on the plains of eastern Colorado. No mystery meatloaf for these students. Douglas County, south of Denver, is among a handful of school districts in Colorado. I mean to bring a touch of fine dining to lunch, replacing canned goods with fresh produce, banning French fries and Coke, and now expanding into upscale meats. "We want to be best in class," said Brent Craig, the district's nutritional services director. "We want to do such a good job that kids enjoy eating lunch here." Over the last decade, a movement to bring locally grown produce into schools has gained popularity. More than 8,000 schools in 39 states participate in such arrangements. In the last couple of years, school nutritionists have started considering locally produced meats as well. But practical considerations prevent most from switching. Food safety is one issue. Schools typically use pre-cooked meat in the meals they serve. Buying it locally means handling fresh meat. Sometimes many districts aren't equipped to do so. And meat served in schools must come from USDA-certified slaughterhouses, a requirement that can disqualify ranchers, says Deborah Eschmeyer of the National Farm to School Network. Pre-cooked beef supplied by the government is also inexpensive, so it's hard to be competitive. Even as school districts nationwide are raising lunch prices to offset climbing food costs, Several Colorado districts have decided the potential benefits of organic meats are worth the trouble. The meat is not only more healthful, but more environmentally palatable, they say. In the southwestern Colorado town of Durango, student nutrition director Krista Grenard also plans to switch next year to beef from a local rancher. She secured a price of $1.99 a pound for the beef, not much more than her average for commercial ground beef, $1.58. The man of starch is not a meat eater. I gave up meat about 9 years ago. I do still eat fish from time to time. I couldn't give up my sushi. But this does start to make sense, and I like looking at this as maybe a way for students to think about where their food comes from. It creates less of a carbon footprint if you have locally raised beef being used at the schools. It's not getting trucked from all over the place. And I don't think a lot of students think about where their food necessarily comes from, and this might start to lead us towards other healthy choices. I know when I go to eat lunch on the rare occasion at the cafeteria, I usually have to get cheese pizza or have to get a sandwich and pick the meat out of it if I want to have a vegetarian option. And we do have an open campus policy so students can go off campus and go to the local restaurants. But I know a lot of campuses are closed campus and you only have the option of bringing lunch from home or eating what is there. So if you're going to eat what is there anyway, especially if you are getting free lunch on the free lunch program, why not have the healthiest choice available? I have a second story this week, and it's a couple of weeks old. I just started the podcast last week, but I thought it was still worth sharing. Out of Los Angeles, students facing felony charges. A teenager faces felony charges and could spend decades in prison over allegations that he repeatedly broke into an acclaimed Orange County high school, hacked into computers to change his grades, and stole tests, all in hopes of improving his college admissions prospects, authorities said Tuesday. Omar Khan, 18, should be graduating with his Tesoro High School classmates today, but instead, he's being held in jail in lieu of $50,000 bail. Another student, Tanvar Singh, also 18, faces lesser charges and is expected to turn himself into authorities this afternoon. Khan of Koto Takaza has been charged with 69 felonies and faces more than 38 years in prison if convicted. Singh of Ladera Ranch has been charged with 5 felony counts and could face 3 years in prison. Singh will be arraigned today and Khan will be arraigned Thursday at Harbor Justice Center in Newport Beach. The investigation is continuing and additional charges could be filed or additional students could be involved, said Jim Amormino, spokesman for the Orange County Sheriff's Department. He said the crimes were unusual for Orange County and fairly sophisticated considering the suspects' ages. I think they wish they would have put their talents into studying, Amormino said. 69 felonies and 38 years in prison, that's a lot of time. I'm sure it'll be far less than this, but I still imagine he will go away to prison for some time, and just goes to show you how much more damage you can do with online grading programs. In the last couple of years, we've all gone to online grading programs, and I'm sure that whatever firewall we create, there is going to be someone out there who can learn how to hack it, and I wonder if he didn't get caught because he was actually bragging about what he was doing, or if a teacher was aware enough that, hey, this kid's been getting a D in my class because he's realized, well, I don't have to study for the test, I'll just change the grade whenever I feel like it so that it'll bring it back up. This week I'm going to focus the review section primarily on graphic novels. Earlier this year I went down to the CAKE conference in Long Beach and I went to a seminar and a session just on graphic novels and how they can be used in the high school classroom as a respectable form of literature. I think this really gained attention and popularity in 1992 with Maus, M-A-U-S, A Survivor's Tale. It's a memoir by Art Spiegelman presented as a graphic novel. It recounts the struggle of Spiegelman's father to survive the Holocaust as a Polish Jew and draws largely on his father's recollections of his experiences. The book also follows the author's troubled relationship with his father and the way the effects of the war reverberate through generations of a family. It won a Pulitzer Prize Special Award, and all the people are presented as anthropomorphic animals. For example, all Jews are depicted as mice, hence the name Maus, which is German for mouse. I first became aware of this graphic novel back when I was in high school, and I didn't think much about it since. But in the last couple of years, my students have gotten me into manga, the Japanese anime cartoon books that you read from the back to the front and the right to the left. I've actually read the Death Note series. Luckily, I have a lot of students who are into Death Note, so they've passed on the different editions to me, and I haven't had to pay $10 a pop. But I've realized that the more and more I catch them reading these in class and they're supposed to be doing something else, instead of fighting against this, why not embrace this and see this as an opportunity to take some rough subject matter that they may not want to approach in a strictly prose short story or novel, and instead present it to them in a graphic novel form, and before they know it, they'll be reading it at a higher level than the manga books, and they'll be broaching subjects that they may not have thought to read about if they had not been presented in a form that was so accessible to them. So for this week, I have three graphic novels I'd like to recommend to you that I've read this summer. And as I pronounce some of the names of the people who've written them, I apologize. I don't have the correct pronunciations in front of me. It feels like the first day of school, and I don't have the kids here to correct me on the pronunciation of their name. The first one is Persepolis, which many people have probably heard of because of the film that came out this year, by Marjane Satrapi. It's an autobiographical graphic novel. The story follows a young girl as she comes of age against a backdrop of the Iranian Revolution, something that my students know nothing about, and this really gives them some access to it. And it goes horribly wrong with Islamic fundamentalists taking power and creating a new theocratic tyranny themselves. And the story ends with Marjane as a 21-year-old expatriate. The title is a reference to the historic city of Persepolis. The film won the Grand Jury Prize at the 2007 Cannes Film Festival. It's rated PG-13, so you can show it to your class. And the film was also nominated for the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature, but it did not win. I recently watched the film. I read the book a couple of months ago, and I'm trying now to get my principal to find some funding, so maybe if we even just pick up 15, the kids can share in class, and they can read about the Iranian Revolution in a much more accessible form. My second recommendation is much more of a glorified comic book, I'd say, than a graphic novel. It's called Pride of Baghdad by Brian K. Vaughan. The story revolves around the brief freedom experienced by a small pride of captive lions who escaped from Baghdad Zoo during the 2003 invasion of Baghdad by U.S. forces. They explore a desolate city, encountering other escaped creatures, before all of the lions are shot dead by soldiers. The story ends with a cynical note that, on that day there, were other casualties as well. It doesn't have nearly as much literature to it as the other books that I've mentioned, Persepolis and Mouse, but it does have this impact. And there's so much symbolism going on with the different animals they meet that we're able to broach the subject of Iraq with students without having to take it head on and being able to see it through a certain type of filter in this comic book. And then again, that's Pride of Baghdad. And my last recommendation is more for the college age or the adult age, but it's a graphic novel that shows that it doesn't have to just be for kids. Fun Home, a Family Tragicomic by Alison Bechdel, was Time Magazine's number one book of the year in 2006. It chronicles the author's childhood and youth in rural Pennsylvania, USA, focusing on her complex relationship with her father. The book addresses themes of sexual orientation, gender roles, suicide, and the role of literature in understanding oneself and one's family. Writing and illustrating Fun Home took 7 years, in part because of Bechdel's laborious artistic process, which includes photographing herself in poses for each human figure. Fun Home also generated controversy. A public library in Missouri removed Fun Home from its shelves for 5 months after local residents objected to its contents. So this can get us into a great discussion on censorship, and it also is an interesting book because she grew up in a funeral home, hence the nickname Fun Home. If you're a fan of Six Feet Under, you're going to see a lot of parallels, except this girl actually lived it, this woman. This was her life, living in this funeral home, and how that affected the rest of her family, having people always coming in and out of her home, always mourning their lost loved ones as they're trying to live a normal life in their house. This week in history, July 11th, 1804, Aaron Burr slayed Alexander Hamilton in a duel. July 10th, 1925, the Scopes monkey trial begins. July 7th, 1930, building of the Hoover Dam began. July 8th, 1951, Paris celebrated its 2,000th birthday. July 6th, 1957, Althea Gibson was the first African-American to win Wimbledon. And the Scopes monkey trial led to the wonderful play Inherit the Wind, which opened on Broadway in 1955. It portrays the trial of a teacher who was convicted for teaching Darwin's theory of evolution to a high school science class in Tennessee during the early 1920s. And now with some events for those high schoolers wondering, is there anything to do in this town? Later on in July, I'm going to go to a baseball game. We do have the luxury in California of having 5 major teams, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Padres, the A's, and the Giants all in one state. And Giants and A's play close enough to each other that There were some days last summer when I was living in Davis that I had to figure out, you know, which ballpark did I want to go to more, and it really depended on who they were playing. The Giants play in a beautiful stadium, which the name changes every 6 months or so we'll just call it Giant Stadium. But you have a view of the Bay Bridge, they serve veggie dogs, which makes a man of starch very happy, and even though the Giants usually lose, it's a beautiful place to watch a game. The A's have even cheaper games usually. It's an older stadium, but the BART will take you right there. And last year they were doing a promotion of $2 Tuesdays for some of their games. You're up in the nosebleed section, but it doesn't matter. For $2, you're watching a baseball game. I have a great live theater recommendation for this week. LakeTahoeShakespeare.com. It's close to North Shore. Usually I go to South Lake Tahoe, but it's not too much of a drive from there. The Tahoe Shakespeare Festival, this year they're featuring A Midsummer Night's Dream, Richard III, and a non-Shakespearean musical called Cambio, a retelling of The Hunchback of Notre Dame set in Havana, Cuba. Performances start July the 9th and run through August 17th. Every single night, performances at 7:30. Cheap seats are $22. They go up to $67. I did see on their website something about youth tickets. It might be worth giving them a call and saying, hey, I'm a high school student. Can I get the youth ticket price? And I believe those start at $14 for the seats in the back. You're sitting outside, you've got a view of the lake, and you're watching a great Shakespeare play or a musical. They switch off the shows every 3 nights, so one night Midsummer Night's Dream, another night Richard III, and another night the musical Cambio. So check that out again at LakeTahoeShakespeare.com. And my cheap recommendation for the week: look around your town and figure out why do people come there if they ever go there on vacation. It's not too hard for me. I live in Mariposa, California, right outside of Yosemite National Park, and I get up there maybe once every year or so. So next week, I'm going to hop in my car, and I'm going to go up there and just check out the sights, go for a hike, bring a picnic lunch, and enjoy the surroundings that people come from all over to see. Last year I went to San Francisco and I walked the Golden Gate Bridge. It's totally free. It's amazing to walk across that bridge, even in the middle of summer. It can be freezing cold. Something I'd always wanted to do, and finally last year I decided, okay, I'm going to do this. So look around and take advantage of whatever it is that's in your backyard. Cool techie site of the week is really more of an advertisement, I guess, that I wanted to let you guys know of a great deal out there. I'm working off of a PC, and I'm looking at maybe getting an Apple, and Apple right now is offering free printers, free iPod Touches up to $299, and cheap software through September with any purchase of an Apple laptop or an Apple desktop computer. If you go in as a student, you can get a discount, so the bottom-of-the-line MacBook, which usually runs about $1,100, you'll get for $1,000. They throw in the iPod Touch. I've already got one, so I'm thinking of selling that on eBay. You get a free printer. You can get software like Adobe Illustrator and Adobe Photoshop, that suite, for around $300. Do make sure when you go onto the site, though, that you check out how to get into it under the education part of it, and tell them that you're a student who's going off to college or a student in high school, and get that discounted price, and that's good through September. And now, etymology for a semi-literate world. I've been working a lot lately with my wiki space at www.starchman.wikispaces.com, and I was starting to wonder, where did that term wiki come from? I think we all know what it means. Wikipedia, especially, if we go in there, we know it's a site where people can add or detract information, and it's always growing on itself. The same with a wiki space. You allow other people to come in and edit your website. And so I looked it up, and it came from, originally it was called the Wiki Web. It was the first site to be called a wiki. Ward Cunningham started developing Wiki Web in 1994 and installed it on the internet domain c2.com on March 25th, 1995. It was named by Cunningham, who remembered a Honolulu International Airport counter employee telling him to take the Wiki shuttle bus that runs between the airport's terminals. According to Cunningham, I chose WikiWiki as an alliterative substitute for quick, thereby avoided naming the stuff QuickWeb. So we could be going to Quickipedia instead of Wikipedia, and if he had not been in Honolulu and gotten the idea from the WikiWiki. When I went on my honeymoon back in October, we got on the WikiWiki, and that's what took us down into Oahu and to our hotel. So I thought that was interesting, the etymology for wiki coming from a shuttle bus, WikiWiki, which means quick. And now it's time for highlights from our local Sheriff's Daily Log. A camper shell was dumped on private property near Dexter Road. A boat was stranded on Lake McClure. A donkey showed up on Nutter Ranch Road. Goats and sheep were constantly crying on Dexter Lane. A family on Peg Leg Road tried everything to get a possum out of their house, but had no luck. A man was egging on a dog fight on St. Andrews Road. That's literally two blocks from where I live. There was a sick fox on Schaefer Road. Foxes seem to be getting sick every week, so I don't know what they're eating or where they're partying on the weekends. And this is my favorite. Suspicious circumstances were reported after a woman found a pile of pistachio shells under her bedroom window. One can only guess what was going on out there. So what have we learned this week? Wikipedia was almost named Quickipedia. Don't challenge Alan Burr to a duel. Cheaters never prosper and sometimes go to prison for a very long time. If you want to buy a new Mac, do it before the end of September. Graphic novels have a place in the classroom. Next time you're eating the mystery meat at the cafeteria, ask yourself, don't you deserve better? And where exactly does this stuff come from? And lastly, if you're going to stand outside someone's window, make sure you bring a snack. That's all the time we have this week for the Man of Starch podcast. We're going to leave you with something I picked up over at PodSafeAudio.com, a more somber song than we've featured in the past, but very beautiful. Alicia Lang's She Do That. Until next time, this is Man of Starch, signing off.
You took it to the wire because you do that, yeah. Your feet were in the fire and yet you knew that, yeah. It took you by did not realize, because you do that. She took you for a ride, because she do that, yeah. There's nowhere she do that. Oh yeah. there's no one left to choose. It's who you know there. Yeah. It wasn't in your head. You're sleeping in her bed. That's all she ever said. Because she'd do that.